Hey, thanks for joining me again on The Wine Road. I'm Jeff Davis, and today I'm happy to present my interview with winemaker Ted Henry of the historic Clos Duval Winery. And if you're a fan of their wine, you'll be interested to hear about recent changes they've made concerning their winemaking philosophy. Clos Duval is in the iconic Stag's Leap appellation, and it so happened that same day some of my family were visiting Napa Valley, so they were able to join me for the interview and the wine tasting provided by Ted. He's a gracious, easygoing guy. We met in their soothing Herendal tasting parlor, which is part of their barrel and tank room. Much of it has been renovated and updated within the last year, and it's set up nicely. This time of year, when there isn't much going on in the barrel room, the lights are dim and they use up lighting for a subtle yet dramatically lit experience. I had interviewed Ted several years ago when he was the winemaker at Jarvis Estate. I started by asking him how long it's been since he moved over to Clos Duval.
It's been 1 year and a half, started in January 2016.
You must be thrilled to be in the iconic Stag's Leap district at a historic winery like Clos Duval.
I am. It's really something that I'm so excited about, the vineyards that we have access to in Stag's Leap. And when I started here, you mentioned the Jarvis Pass was a winery that was all state, and it had its own unique little terroir up in the mountains. And I really thought that there was some parallels to what we were doing in the winery here at Clos Duval. When, you know, I was told about all these changes that were going on, moving to 100% estate and focusing on these, you know, mostly Stag's Leap vineyards. So, yeah, it's been something I'm really excited about and continue to be excited about all these changes.
Yeah, I did not realize that this winery was founded by a couple of French guys back in the early 70s. And apparently they searched the globe to find a perfect spot to grow Bordeaux wines. And they landed here in Stag's Leap. Purchased 150 acres. They founded the winery in 1972, but then in an interesting twist, just 4 years later, their wines were part of the Napa Valley wines that defeated the French in the 1976 Paris tasting, so kind of like a oops moment.
Well, no, I think they're pretty happy with that, actually. Yeah, the story is true. Bernard Porte was out here, and you know, he was unfamiliar. He was a French guy, literally, you know, coming straight from Bordeaux, and not knowing the valley that well, he actually drove up and down the valley and used the, you know, incredibly sensitive measurement of putting his arm out the window in his car, and was in Calistoga and was thinking, this is too hot. This is too hot for growing grapes, Cabernet Bordeaux varietals, and went down the valley and kind of came over this crest of the hill just to the north of where we are, and came into Stag's Leap, which is the small little kind of valley within Napa Valley, and really felt this difference in the temperature, thought, there's something here. I'm going to check this out. Really looked around, did a lot of research, and found eventually someone that would sell him a parcel of land.
It's an interesting terroir here because you have the hills, you have the valley floor, you have warmer temperatures from just the typical valley temperatures, and then the cooling influence does kind of come up this way from San Pablo. So there's a lot going on just in this one little stretch.
Yeah, it's true. The other thing that's interesting is the valley is unique from the rest of Napa for sure, but it tends to be, at least in our parcels, pretty homogenous within the blocks. So we have a large our Herendal vineyard out here that is, you know, we've got 130 acres, and I can go through and walk through the vineyard and see almost no difference between vine row and vine row. As far as you can usually see difference in vigor or different crop loads because of different, you know, underground soil issues or whatever. But it's a really consistent, just amazingly, beautiful vineyard.
I should point out, getting back to the Paris tasting, that many people know that Stag's Leap Wine Cellars won the red category, the Cabernet, but they did the tasting again 10 years later, and Clos Duval was the winner of that competition.
Yes, that's right. It's funny you mention that because the estate that was used to make these grapes back in the day had really proven to age, you know, even to this point, 45 years or whatever it's been. I've been pulling wines from the early 70s since I've been here, and they have incredible just silkiness, life to them that a lot of wines from Napa Valley no longer have. So I think that was a nice surprise that they did well back then, and then 10 years later, and then it doesn't surprise me because I've tasted them today. I actually did a similar tasting. They kind of rehashed the Paris tasting all the time, and there was one that was done in Las Vegas. And we did the same group of wineries with the modern versions of, you know, the vintages. And we did quite well in that too. And it was kind of fun to see how things have changed in all these decades.
So you have quite a legacy from which to grow and add your stamp. Are you excited about that, or does that make you a little nervous?
Well, thanks for bringing that up. Try not to screw it up. I think actually there's so much more upside here because we have all these amazing resources that have been underutilized. With the size of our winery going from nearly 100,000 cases just a few years ago down to less than half of that now, we've really focused on just the best of the best vineyards. And in the past, we didn't even have access to some of those because we had some long-term contracts selling grapes to other top-notch producers in Napa Valley that were using those grapes for, you know, $150, $200 bottles of wine that were, you know, getting great reviews. And so being able to bring those into the winery and actually make the best Clos du Vall that we can is something that my predecessors didn't really have an opportunity to do recently. So we're seeing that in barrel samples from 16 and 15 that are just off the charts as far as, you know, quality levels. So I'm definitely excited about it. It's really not something I feel like it would be hard to screw up because the grape sources are so good.
Well, and now the whole winemaking and wine growing philosophy has changed a bit, and I'm guessing that's partly why you came in. Tell us about this fairly, I don't know if aggressive is the right word, because you're actually pulling back. How's that going to work out?
On the quantities of wine we're producing? Yeah, it was something that I think really needed to be done because we have a, you know, top-notch group of neighbors over here. We've got, you know, Stag's Leap Wine Cellar, Stag's Leap Wine. We've got Odette just up the street here. The Hartwell property was just sold to Realm. And, you know, some of these producers, they're making top-notch, world-class wines that, you know, we should absolutely be in that same category with. And I feel from what I've been tasting that we are, and it just needs to be, it needs to come to fruition. And so I think it's the right move. It's the right time to do it. And we have the right crew in place to realize that, to make it happen. So
what you're doing is you're going estate only. Prior to this year, you were purchasing grapes and you made a larger volume Cabernet. And so now you're just doing estate only.
Correct. So yeah, every single grape that goes in a bottle of Clos du Vall was something that we grew ourselves. And that's really essential to controlling quality from beginning to end. And a lot of people don't realize that that's one of the few things that's on a bottle of wine that actually has a very strict legal definition too. I can call anything reserve or grand amazing or special selection, and it really doesn't have any legal definition whatsoever. But if I put a state bottled or state grown on a label, I mean, that means that has to be all from your property. You had to grow those grapes, or you cannot legally put that on there. So that's why you don't see that word very often, because it's something that's kind of hard to use, because most wineries don't have the holdings to be able to do that.
You can see single vineyard, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's one that you own.
Correct. Yeah, of course. I mean, people use single vineyards all the time for famous vineyards that grow amazing grapes, but that again is another layer where you're kind of, you know, up to their discretion on how they want to sell you fruit.
We'll learn more about their fairly new winemaking philosophy, their Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, and their tasting room experience when we continue on the Wine Road. Thanks for sticking around for part two of On the Wine Road. At this point, I was asking winemaker Ted Henry about their reserve program and the other label they have, Joie du Vin, the joy of wine. As you'll hear, some changes have been made on that level. And note to collectors, pick up some Joie du Vin while you still have the chance.
So there's been a couple of changes on that tier. So we have our estate Cabernet, and then we, in 2014, launched the Herondale Vineyard, which is the name of our estate here at Stag's Leap.
That's the vineyard out in front.
It's a vineyard out front. We have a little bit of an aside here, but we have 130 acres or so, 130 acres that are in Stag's Leap. And that's kind of the heart of our Clos du Vall Bordeaux program. And what I think is significant about that number is the Stag's Leap district itself is only about 1,200 acres of planted vines. So that means Clos du Vall owns 10% of Stag's Leap, which is a big percentage. So this is a lot of grapes from one of the top wine Cabernet sub-regions in Napa Valley. That's something that's pretty special. So we thought we should name this vineyard other than just Clos du Vall Vineyard or whatever. So we came back to the winery and said, you know, what is it? What's just one unique, interesting thing? And I think as we were talking about, there's these swarms of swallows, these birds that come to the winery every year and kind of make a mess of the parking lot. And it used to be you get a free tasting if one hits you with, you know, COVID. So the word for swallow, the bird in French, is Hermandale. And so we thought, well, that'd be kind of cool. You know, these guys have become a staple of our winery for decades. They've always been part of Clos du Vall. Every year before harvest, they come in and take over. And so why not name the vineyard after them? They're here anyway. And so that's what we've done. And so this property that is in Stag's Leap is called Hermandale Vineyard. And so we now, our top tier Cabernet is called Hermandale, and so that's a really special wine for us. I do that as 100% Cabernet Sauvignon, something that's not a classic Clos du Vall style, but for me, I really wanted to accentuate that variety and just take the best of the best Stag's Leap Cabernet from Hermandale and do 100% Cabernet. The tier above that, our top, you know, Tête de Cuvée, is the Three Graces. So this is a new wine. So what used to be, that you mentioned, the Joie de Monde, is now Three Graces. So that wine has changed to that name, and that is the no holds barred. There's no rules on that wine. So I can make that wine from whatever's the best wine in the winery. Typically, it ends up being mostly Stag's Leap Cabernet, some Merlot, some Petit Verdot, maybe Cabernet Franc. We've planted some Malbec recently, so maybe that'll make it in the future. But the idea is not to be constrained by anything. And instead of just focusing on varietal Cabernet, like I do in the Hermandale, it's more like, you know, what's just that most beautiful, delicious wine for this vintage? So one year it might be, 80, 90% Cabernet, and the next year it might be 40% Cabernet Sauvignon, and the rest is Cab Franc or Merlot or what have you. So
I love when winemakers get that opportunity, because you can always make the best wine from that season, and it does vary. Your Merlot might be better one year than it was the year previously, or the Cabernet might not be as good, but you have that control to make the best wine, and then that is the top tier.
Exactly. I think it gives me the freedom to not be bound by some rule for, you know, sales or marketing purposes where, oh, we want this to be labeled Cabernet, so it has to be 75% or whatever. It's just make the best wine. That's all. And it has to be estate grapes. So there is, I guess, a rule. So it is from our property somewhere. So it could be from Yountville, could be, from mostly from Stag's Leap, but it's just the best wine that we have in the cellar.
Your portfolio also includes Pinot Noir and Chardonnay from the Carneros wine region. So you have vineyards down there. Do you enjoy working with those varietals?
Yeah, we interestingly enough, we do have mostly Chardonnay and Pinot Noir in Carneros, but we found that Merlot does quite well out there too. So we planted a fairly significant section of the vineyard to Merlot, and I've been really happy with the results from that. So Chardonnay is something that I think is fun because there's so many elements that go into that fermentation, and it starts in the vineyard with a clone. So we've got several different Dijon clones. We've got some selections from nearby vineyards. We have a Hyde Vineyard selection. We've got some old Wente derived clones that have been around in California forever. So going through and making these picking decisions and kind of initially putting those different clones of Chardonnay together kind of is the first step in winemaking in the Chardonnay. So that's a lot of fun. Similar thing on the Pinot Noir, where we have a lot of different clones that tend to be different styles. Some are more spicy, some are more bright fruit, some have different characters and color levels that really distinguish it, and some work better with certain yeasts and what have you. So the Pinot Noir is also a really kind of fun, challenging wine. And then I do a rosé of Pinot Noir, and so that one has to be farmed completely differently and picked at an earlier time. So there's a lot of complex things that are going on. The other thing that's fun about Carneros, just to throw it out there, is I'm doing a new white blend block, which is just for something at the winery that's kind of neat. That's going to be a blend of some Rhone varieties. I'll have Marsan and Roussan out there. We'll get some, I think we've got Pinot Blanc that's going to be in that blend. So it'll be a block that we'll do like a field blend and just do a fun white.
Those can be very nice too.
Yeah,
and especially good food wines.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of a nice, crisp, fresh wine. Probably won't see a lot of oak, and it'll be something that we'll mostly just sell at the winery.
My brother and his wife hate Pinot Blanc.
Excellent. Thank you for that.
Just found that out a little while ago. I'll cut that out. Maybe.
My favorite part of the interview.
You were showing me around before the interview, and they sure have put a lot of thought and money into this fermentation space. You pointed out your new, smaller fermentation tanks, and I mean, that indicates that they're very serious about how they're structuring their new winemaking philosophy here at Clos du Val.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's amazing that the tools that I have to use are completely new. I mean, this was the old winery, I mean, going back just a couple of years, had a lot of equipment that had been used, you know, since the 70s, and you know, things have been replaced over the years as needed. But the technology now has changed quite a bit. Like the crusher destemmers that I use now are a totally different technology than what's been used in the last 50 or 60 years, and stuff like that really makes a difference, because when you initially handle those grapes, the more you beat them up, the more, you know, early tannin extraction you get, you know, the kind of the worse you are down the road. So the more gentle handling and being able to just control all those aspects, I think is key. And the other thing is you hit on the tanks that are in this room. There's 6 to 8 ton tanks that allow me to take the best blocks that we have in Stag's Leap and ferment those separately to potentially make, into those blends like the Three Graces or the Herondale. So the premium, you know, best of the best. Where in the past, we didn't have tanks that were that small. So that meant if I had a beautiful 5 or 6 ton lot of Cabernet, I had to blend it with another 5 or 6 ton lot to fit into our smallest 12 ton tank. And that meant that potential high quality lot disappeared. And that's something that, we've gained back. So that just makes the top wines that are coming out of this winery all that much better.
There's more building going on too. You were telling me up front you're going to have some glass exposure to the roadway and the vineyard, and a lot of exciting things yet to come.
Yeah, we're trying to up the consumer experience a bit. So when people come in to taste, we can do a more one-on-one sit down, you know, hosted tasting. We typically have had a tasting room experience that was sort of a bar. You come up and try a few things, and
often got crowded. By the way, that was my experience the last time I was here.
Extremely crowded on weekends. I mean, that has been a real issue. And you know, the experience that I would particularly want if I was going tasting was I want to sit down, I want to learn about these wines, learn about the property, learn about the vineyards, hear a few things about the history, and you can't do that in that really crowded setting. So if we have several different spaces, small individual rooms, we can sit people down, sit down with one of our staff members and taste through the wines and learn the story. And so we're actually expanding on to the winery to accommodate that space and kind of moving around some of the other spaces that we have within the winery to get a better experience for everyone.
And that's where we are right now, here in the Herondale Tasting Parlor. We're about to do a tasting with my family. They're sitting here with us, and we're really looking forward to trying the new wines here at Clos du Val, at least the earlier versions of them.
Yes, you're absolutely right. This room is brand new within the last year, and we have built up the space within our barrels and kind of overlooking our new fermentation tanks to give people kind of an idea of what, you know, it brings up what I've been talking about as far as our direction we're going. And I'm looking forward to, well, harvest is coming up sooner than I'd like it probably, but when we have harvest in the next couple of months here, it'll be interesting to be able to have guests come in, taste wines while we're literally making wines 3 feet away from them, which will be a pretty fun experience. Might be a little louder actually when we're in here doing it, but that'll be fun. So I think it'll be a neat experience, and it'll be a fun thing for people to do. So.
Well, I'm very happy for you, Ted. I think you've landed at a great spot, and I know you must be very excited about the future, and I imagine you're planning on being here for quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, this is just the beginning of this transformation. I mean, it really is kind of the infancy. I mean, what we're doing this year is releasing wines that we're just at the cusp of when we are making these changes. So really, when we release next year, we'll release the wines that had a lot more of this influence, and then by the time, you know, 2019 rolls around, it'll be all full, you know, completely everything in the winery will be done in a new way at a different level. And so it's a long-term thing for sure. And I'm really excited to see how it turns out.
Winemaker Ted Henry of the historic Clos Duval Winery. You can learn more about them and read their new winemaking philosophy, even see some videos about it at closduval.com. That's closduval.com. It was good to spend time once again with Ted, and we really enjoyed the tasting, and I'm sure you will too. If you're listening to this on iTunes or another podcast provider, you can learn more about my show at onthewineroad.com and on Facebook as well. I'm on Instagram under the name JD Wineroad and on Twitter at JD Wineroad. I'm Jeff Davis. Thanks for listening to this podcast of On the Wine Road.